WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively in Ocean City, Maryland. Where's Tom Perlazza? Where's the mayor? It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. We have had John Martin, Seth Elkin just walk by. The state fair is happening, Home Run Riches, the Ravens thing's rolling out. But they're celebrating 50 years. I'm celebrating 25. I've got my new logo. I didn't even want to do the show down here until I fixed my logo up. Our friends at the Window Nation, 86690Nation, have sent the floppy hat. My hair looks too pretty today to wear the floppy hat, but I am going to wear the floppy hat. And, of course, Leonard Raskin. I still haven't christened the Raskin Global. This is a really special crab mallet. Your husband would love this crab mallet. This is a crab mallet.
I think we have one.
And it opens beer on the side.
Oh, yes.
You have this one?
Yes, we've got one.
Well,
like
I mean, of course you do, because you're married to John Spur. She is the Honorable Councilwoman, Odette Ramos. She represents people in Baltimore City.
The fabulous 14th District, by the way.
14th District, absolutely. I want to make sure we get that square. You're going to give everybody the demarcation on how gerrymandered and the whole thing's a mess. But yours isn't all that all. It's not straight lines. Nothing's straight lines in mapping for political districts.
No, because
right?
It's based on the precinct and the census tract and all of that.
It's not based on humans. Right, exactly.
Right.
Her husband and I have been friends for, 35, at least 30 years.
Yes.
He was the guy that when the ball would stop at the Edie Brown, I love you, fabulous Baltimore Arena on the carpet, that the minute the game would stop and the guys run around in their shorts and my dudes, I go back to Billy Ronson, I go back to Doug Neely, all my dudes, Chris Vaccaro, he'd play the music. So,
yes. He was the DJ for Baltimore Blast, yes.
Hey, I'm seeing Earth, Wind & Fire and Lionel on Saturday.
Oh, we went to the Earth, Wind & Fire show a few months ago. It was awesome.
Yeah, and I'm really upset with you and a couple of people because, like, the arena's about to open up. And, you know, I could give Frank the hard time that I usually give him because, you know, I love him more than he loves me. But nobody invited me. And that night, because I was too tired. It was opening day. We had a store. Opening day moved.
There was so much going on that week.
Springsteen, all that weekend, right?
Yes.
The Eagles. And on my timeline, my wife and I were just like, I don't know, we're making food. And, like, all of you were popping up. I'm at Earth, Wind & Fire. I'm Earth, Wind & Fire.
It was a great show.
Sing
it was a great
song.
Show.
And yeah. I'm like, how did the arena... Nobody tells me anything. And then I found out you had to be an elected or a, you know, whatever. And it was a small gathering.
It was.
But I'm looking forward to getting back down there. So many good things going on in the city. And you're like a champion of the city. You're one of my favorite people.
Yeah.
I'm purple. You're purple. I'm orange today.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah.
Yes, we got that going on.
We got that today.
So what's happening in the city? Give me a little. I ran into Zeke last night at a cocktail function. Down here, I'm seeing people around town. Brandon's coming by. The Honorable Mayor is coming by in a little while.
Yeah.
What do people outside need to know about what's going on the inside?
You know, Baltimore is a great city. There are lots of places to visit. There are great neighborhoods with amazing restaurants and parks. And I represent an area that has the Waverly Farmers Market, so the best farmers market in the region that you can come to on
Don't
Saturdays.
Tell my wife that, because she's still going. Brandon's going to come and talk about the one we've been going to for all these years.
But oh, no. Waverly's the best.
When is it?
It's on Saturday morning, 7 a.m. to noon. And believe me, people show up at 7 a.m., okay?
You get the fresh stuff that way.
So, absolutely. So there's lots to see. There's lots to visit in Baltimore. It's a great place to live, too. We're working hard on making sure that there is more housing. The work that I do is around housing, keeping people in their homes, making sure there's affordable housing, addressing these vacant properties. So we're making slow progress, but we're making progress. And so I think that's good. The mayor will talk about the fact that, you know, homicides are down by 25%, but one is too many. So there's still a lot of work to do.
That's not a small thing. 25% is a big... And that's measurable.
That's attributed to the alternative work that's going on with the group violence reduction strategy, with ROCA, with all of the things we're trying to do to make sure that people know that there are resources out there.
And it takes one incident in Cherry Hill, one night, over one to make it look like all the good stuff that is happening isn't happening. And
Well, there's still a lot of work to do. I mean, there is. I mean, the problem is, one of the biggest problems is there's just too many guns on the street. And they're all illegal guns. That's not the case. Maryland has the strictest gun laws in the entire country. And so they're not from Maryland. They're coming in from other places. And so we need our help from our federal partners. And I've talked with both senators about this, in terms of our regional partners, to make sure that the guns aren't even coming into Baltimore, because the police are actually taking off. You know, 2 years ago, they were getting only about 500 guns off the street, and now it's triple that, like, as of this time this year. So it's like 1,500 guns off the street so far this year. So they're doing their job. We just don't want them to be in a hamster wheel with more coming in. And young people are getting the guns, I think, mostly because they're scared. And so we've got to do
a lot more.
That's
something that people don't consider in the suburbs, because they're living a different kind of life, right? And they can't put their minds around, if it's my 15... I mean, listen, I'm from Dundalk. I went to Holabird. I had my Holabird teacher during the Crab Cake Tour, my middle school music teacher. I took him. He's in his 80s. He's a beautiful man. We sang some show tunes together on the 25th anniversary. And I think back to, like, being in middle school, and I've talked to other teachers, the fights during those days up on the hill every single day, 1979, 1980, 1981.
Those were fist fights. We did fist fights.
And sometimes there was a knife. Sometimes there were, you know, girls. Sometimes there was hair pulling. Sometimes there was blood. And I'm thinking of all of that, like, I went to school in fear in 7th and 8th and 9th grade to some degree. That there were kids I went to school with in Dundalk who were dead by the time they were 20, in prison, dealing drugs. I mean, I looked through my yearbook. I'm like, yeah, I see all of the things. Guns, murder, I've had all of that, right? And I think to myself, I went to school kind of like afraid of the gooch, like, let's play the different strokes. You know, everybody, there was a bully in every school, and I'm thinking to myself, let's take that 40 years, 50 years later, and in my mind, and think about being 14, being 15 in that environment. And I don't think people in the suburbs can put their head in around that. I think that's a tough concept.
I don't think so. But it's also really, really important to understand that what's happening is not random. People who are shooting each other know each other. And so it's really around conflict management, and how do we make sure that in the schools, at home, people are understanding that, you know, just a side eye or talking with another neighbor or whatever doesn't mean that you just can go shoot people. So it's very different than, I think, what the image out there is, like, there's random shooting, they're shooting. No, that's not what's happening. And so I think it's important that we're really focused on what is actually happening, which is that it's interpersonal and it's
conflict resolution.
Yep. And so having conflict resolution is going to be really important, which is something that Safe Streets works on, which I'm a big fan of. And also that, you know, we're working on it in schools as well. I mean, Mervo, which I represent, is working on implementing that into part of the curriculum. So I think it's going to be, it's just an all hands on deck situation. I do serve on the Public Safety Committee, which is why I'm paying attention to all of this. But also, you know, my big issue is making sure that young people and their families have good, decent places to live. If they're, you know, constantly thinking they're going to get evicted, or they're living in conditions because the landlord's not fixing them up, or they live next to a vacant property that's having, you know, mold issues and water issues and all of that, I don't know how the young people can actually be ready for school. You know, the research is clear that if they walk next to vacant properties on the way to school, that cortisol in the brain comes up and it blocks learning. It's a stress reaction. And so the more we can minimize stress in our young people, I think the more that we're going to have success in making sure that they stay alive and that they're really successful.
And there's also post-trauma, because every kid in the city from a neighborhood has had some sort of trauma. I mean, I remember in Holabird, when I keep thinking of my own eighth grade experience, we lost, there was a child drowned over a weekend, and everybody
lots of
knew.
Trauma.
Yeah, and that was a traumatic thing just in my school. And I remember it 40 years later. I remember the child. And I'm thinking to myself, every school situation, neighborhood, gunshots you hear in the neighborhood. I never heard gunshots in my neighborhood as a kid. And the displacement and the thought that you're transient, the thought, well, I might be here for a day, a week, a month, but I know I'm going to be going somewhere else. Speak to your background. Let people know who you are a little bit. Not everybody's voting for Odette. Odette Ramos is here for the 14th. We're at Mako. your background and the way you served people before you were a councilwoman, this was, what was that charge for you about housing and stability? Really, you're a social work, right? I mean, that's like your work was in helping.
Not, I mean, a little bit. I mean, a lot of what I did. So I've been in Baltimore for a little over 30 years. And in that
time. And your people are from where?
Yeah, I'm from Puerto Rico. So, yes, I'm the very first Hispanic elected official in Baltimore City. So not only do I have my constituency in my district, but I also have a citywide contingency.
I'm the very first Latino-based media organization to be banned by the Orioles and the Ravens. So, you know, I feel makes me feel warm and special and fuzzy.
Right. Well, on that one, we don't want more of that to happen. In my case, we actually want more Latinos in office.
But 30 years ago when you came here, listen, I was born here, right, in 68. In my childhood, my father was from Venezuela, and they had a whole Venezuelan sort of Colombian connection of friends. There were not a whole lot of Hispanic people in Baltimore.
No, it has
changed. And my dad had to go to D.C. to find a Hispanic market to get a plantain. My father had to drive to D.C.
And that's not the case now. I mean, we've got so many people who are from all different kinds of countries, from the Latin American countries, that are in Baltimore now, and it's awesome. It's amazing.
And we haven't elected.
So,
but your background was in housing, right?
So after getting out of Goucher and getting graduate school at Rutgers, I came back to Maryland and initially worked for Senator Mikulski and for, you know, Delegate Campbell and a few, you know, just trying to see if being a staff person was the way to go. And I was like, no, I'm not going to be a staff person. And so
constituent services.
So then I got involved with the nonprofit world at what now Strong City was Greater Homewood. Strong City's in a big bad place right now, but really organizing and looking at what's happening in our neighborhoods. And so I was an organizer for a long time, then started the Baltimore Neighborhood Indicators Alliance because it's really about the neighborhoods and you can see what's going on, but you got to couple it with the data so that you can actually have a lot more to say and actually prove that what you're thinking about and seeing anecdotally is actually playing out in the data, right? So that's why I started. I was the founding director there. And then I started my own consulting business, working with community development organizations and small businesses. And then my last job was with the Community Development Network of Maryland. I was the executive director. And so I did a lot of work statewide on the same three topics, keeping people in their homes, making sure we've got tools to address vacant properties, and make sure we have affordable housing. So one of the big things that we did at the time was, in Baltimore City, we have an affordable housing trust fund. I was one of the leaders of the trust fund, of getting that up and running. So it was a voter initiative. It was finding the funding. It was all of that.
And education of why it's important.
Why it's important, what the goals were, bringing a coalition of folks together. That's not easy. So it was a great, great accomplishment. Passed a lot of legislation in the General Assembly. And so when my predecessor, the Honorable Councilwoman Mary Pat Clark, decided.
Whom, by the way, I saw at the Seal concert. But she didn't see me, but I saw her.
So she's doing great, by the way. She didn't move to Florida, but who would? And so she's very much involved in the community, and she's been a great mentor. So she decided to retire. And so I thought, well, you know, can I make more of a difference by continuing being on the outside, pushing in, or being in city government to actually see how we can do it?
Let me ask you, though. If I would have... And I'm embarrassed that I haven't met you because I've just known your husband forever and I knew of you online and even seeing your work before you were elected. How did you identify before your councilwoman? What would you have said? I am a community developer. You know, your job?
Right,
what was
right.
your title?
No, that's right. I mean, I had always been
I said social work, man. You frowned upon that.
Community,
but I'm like,
that's a really
no, that's,
community
that's,
organizer, really.
Community organizer.
Because, I mean,
okay.
Social work is very, very important. And it's, you know, one-on-one work with somebody, which I've done and continue to do. But a lot of this community organizing and community development is really looking holistically at the entire community.
Right.
What people are going through and how we can make the place good for the people that are there. That's what this is. And so it's sort of an all, because if you can do all the housing you want, but if you don't have stores to walk to or you don't have services like laundry or anything else, then, you know, that's not going to be a community.
Well, groceries are an issue for people.
Right, exactly. Oh, yeah, absolutely. So it's a holistic way of thinking about community. So in Baltimore, a lot of us love our walkable communities. I live in Charles Village. I have a lot of places where I can go for my basic needs and just to hang out. That's not the case in other places in the city. So we have to create that with the people who are already there, not to replace them, but keep our legacy residents there who stuck it out for the long term, and we want to keep them there. So, one of the other topics I work on is around keeping people in their homes, which is tax sale. I mean, what kind of city, what kind of state, and there's only 20 of them, you know, kicks people out of their homes because they can't pay their taxes? That's insane, right?
Well, yeah, where are you sending them?
Yeah, it's not even that. So what happens in tax sale is the lien that you didn't pay, taxes, water bill, whatever, gets sold to an investor, and that person goes back to the homeowner and says, pay me all this money and pay the lien and you can have your, and I won't foreclose on your house. How predatory is that? Because then you've got to make decisions about, you know, medications, food, or pay this guy to save your house. That's insane. So what we're doing is...
And you've seen this every day of your life for 20 years, right? Like,
oh no,
these are people crying in your office, and you try to...
It is so painful and so horrible that this is happening.
Dehumanizing, really.
Yeah,
really.
And it's not like people don't want to pay.
And we always... We drive by and see people on the street with a sign, and we say... What happened to that? What's the story behind that?
I know.
The story behind that is, you know, when somebody like you can't help them, right? Like, literally.
And it's been so frustrating. So we're changing the system so it doesn't happen. So we're working on, I introduced legislation to and got it passed to allow for current taxpayers to pay monthly. So you could sign up and you can pay your taxes monthly and not two times a year. If obviously your mortgage pays it already, so you don't, you know, when you're paying your mortgage, but there are people who own their home outright that don't have a mortgage. So they're allowed to, they can now pay monthly rather than two times a year. And then we've introduced legislation to create payment plans in arrears. So if you're behind on your taxes, you can find a way and work with the city to get back. But also there's other programs out there that the state has and others that people may not know about. So we want to work with residents to figure out how to make sure to, A, the taxes are paid, or B, that their burden is lowered by entering all of these other programs. But we need help from the General Assembly, and so it's taken years of advocacy to get the General Assembly ready to completely cancel the tax sale, and so that we can work with residents. The other piece of tax sale is a lot of times vacant properties have high liens and nobody's paying the taxes. Right now, people aren't paying the taxes on vacant properties, and we have properties that have $200,000, $300,000 of liens. Who's going to buy that? So it's just sitting there. We have a new tool that I helped to bring to Baltimore called in-rem foreclosure. When the liens are higher than the value of the property, the city can foreclose on that immediately. We have an amazing partnership.
I mean, it's basically a walk-away at this point, right? I mean,
well, a lot of people are walking away. Some people have been holding. Some people died, and the family doesn't want to come back and help.
And be underwater.
Right.
Coming back.
So,
and have
so
work to do, right?
Once the city forecloses, the liens are released and wiped away. And that's a start fresh, you know, so that then we can control the outcome of the property. We're about to expand that program. So tax sale is really sort of all of the above. If we're going to cancel it, we have to make sure we're dealing with the vacant properties. We're helping our homeowners be able to pay their taxes and get the revenue into the city. And then, you know, these guys that are tax sale purchasers, they'll be able to find another job. So, I mean, I've been really clear about that. We are going to reform the system, and it's a big deal. So I've been working on that as an advocate prior to my job now. And now as a council person, we're actually making headway on this issue. The mayor has taken residents who are homeowners out of tax sale. We're setting up payment plans for them so that they can, you know, get back into, you know, or work with them on what other programs might be eligible. So this is actually real. It's amazing, but it's slow progress. It's been frustrating, but we are definitely getting there.
Talk about Brandon a little bit, and the mayor and the city council and your good, bad. I mean, it feels like I hear about you when there's a throwdown, you know, you know, when somebody's pissed at somebody, and you usually are, you're a straw that stirs a drink, you know what I mean? Give us the state, because I left the city a year and a half ago, and Johnny O's applauding that. Man, my business has been out of the county.
Welcome you whenever you want to come back.
Well, I'll be back tomorrow night, for crying out loud. I'll be eating tacos at Clavel at some point, and I'll be driving through Ecobin and Hamden and getting broccoli and eating it out of a chopstick. I mean, I'm in the city all the time. But the state of the city and the perception, and look, I don't watch WBFF Fox 45.
Neither do I. I don't think anybody should.
As full disclosure, I just don't want to see. When I put it on, it's just gross to me, and
it's awful.
I'm like, how do you all sit around and contrive this Batman Joker version of producing.
It's horrible.
I mean, I would laugh at it if it weren't so effective in a bad way that I go out on the street and hear that in Carroll County or Harford County or Anne Arundel County, where I go with the Crab Cake Tour. By the way, we'll be at Pappas in Glen Burnie on the 29th with Stuart Pittman, Anne Arundel County executive, who is raring to go from, you know, I ran into him last night. He's like, I'm ready for you. And then on the 15th, we're back down at Fadley's at Lexington Market. We're going to have Dr. Jenkins from Coppin State, as well as new basketball head coach Larry Stewart joining us. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery, celebrating 50 years while we celebrate 25. You like my new logo? I got a cupcake. I got some sort of like Walt Disney World, you know, I'm waiting for Tinkerbell to fly in like this. Our friends at Window Nation, 866 90 Nation, for putting us on the road down here in Ocean City. Odette Ramos, the honorable councilwoman of the 14th, community organizer, pot stirrer, champion of the people. Give me your district, because people are going to say, Odette, is that two T's, one D? They're going to Ramos. You're right in the middle of the city.
I'm right in the middle of the city. So I have roughly Falls Road on Hamden side.
Okay.
So I do represent the Avenue and Icky Ben and, you know, all that. And then all the way over to
Tell
Clifton
Steve
Park.
To do my show. Get on him over
I
at
Icky
Ben. I'm very – I mean, I have like a bucket list. I mean, I get the governor on. I can't get him on. It's bothering me. You know, I get Cal Ripken and his kid on.
I think you got to go there.
I've been there. I'm done kissing his ass. Come, bring me your broccoli, Steve. All right, I'm sorry. I'm getting personal now with him.
It's all good. I feel,
and they're not a sponsor, but I just want to say this out, because I tell people all the time, I feel so dirty. I pull into that back alley and I get the broccoli, and you have to eat it right away because it's broccoli tempura, right? Got to get the chopsticks, and I sit there and I eat it, and I'm like, I feel like I'm eating something bad for me. Then I realize it's like broccoli and it's good for me.
It's good.
And it feels like I'm eating dark chocolate.
It is amazing. I love Icky Ben. I just am so excited that they're in my district.
Yeah, I'm excited they're in your district too.
They are just amazing. They're amazing people. Food is amazing.
That's great.
We have great stories like this in our city. I know. Well, it's a great mix with the Avenue. I mean, we've got, you know, the Jerk Taco folks. We've got the new hot dog place. We've got, you know, Golden West. We've got, you know, real, you know, you just should visit, you know, Hamden the Avenue, and you can just spend a week there eating.
You go to Rofo and get some chicken up there, too. That's my sponsor now.
Right.
Come
okay.
Do that right. So for you represent this incredible part of the city.
Right. And I go all the way to Clifton Park. So I also include Lake Montebello, Clifton Park, which is amazing. Also the Waverly area and Edward Garden. So I Coldstream Homestead Montebello. It's a very, very diverse. I represent Sherwood Gardens too. So it's a very diverse area. I've got, you know, 600 vacant properties in my district, and I've got the mansion. So it's a very interesting district.
600 vacant properties, and I know 599 plus one upset you, right?
So like, oh, all the time.
So. For what you do, how do you get 600 a year from now? We sit and you say it's down to 4 or 3 or 2.
So we've done an inventory of all of them. We know which ones are in REM eligible, which ones will be available for the expansion. You know, frankly, it's going to take a lot of resources to make sure that the city is ready with the amount of lawyers that they need to do the in REM process.
It's not easy, huh? No.
Well, I've also introduced legislation to create a quasi-governmental entity called a land bank or a land reutilization authority, which would just make it all quicker because they don't have to go through the bureaucracy. You can just have people there. They're going to, you know, be the lawyers to do the in REM. They'll work with communities on the outcomes of the properties and make it happen. It will be a much quicker process.
Right, okay.
Because we are in crisis. I mean, we've got 15,000 and actually more, because there's only 15,000 vacant properties that have the notice that says it's vacant. But I've got properties in my district, you know, 1818 Chilton and a few others where the elder has passed. The neighbors are keeping up the property because they don't want their properties to look bad, but it's not designated vacant until it starts to fall apart. So we have way more of those. If you look at the data around like stopped mail.
What with asbestos and lead paint? Every day you see that?
We still have an issue with lead paint. As a matter of fact, I have a family in my district who the landlord is a total horrible person and didn't do the proper testing and committed fraud. And so, you know, didn't get the proper lead certificates. And it's just really horrible. So we've had to move that family. So it still happens. Obviously, in vacant properties, it's got, you know, the pretty sick properties. So I'm actually not of the belief that we need to demolish everything. That's just not what we want to do. I think we're going to erase our history if we do that. I'm of the mind of, if we can rehab the properties, because they don't make them like that anymore. I mean, this is Baltimore, right? These properties are amazing. The skeleton, the bones.
Man, when I drive around around Druid Hill Park and I see the homes,
those are amazing.
It's unbelievable.
Unbelievable. They don't make them like this anymore. Why would we want to erase
them? I could see
that?
How people would come to Baltimore in the last century and just be like, just in love with, you know, I see these
pictures.
But that's
one of the reasons why I actually stayed in Baltimore, because you can't get that anywhere else. You can't get the architecture that we have here.
And I don't think people appreciate, I travel places and I see places. We are uniquely European and uniquely old school.
Yeah.
And there's no Dallas or anywhere west of the Mississippi that looks anything like this. And there's nothing south of Richmond that looks anything like this, right?
Not at all. There's nothing. You can't. And so
Philadelphia and Boston, maybe a few little, you know, aspects of it. But maybe Brooklyn or some brownstones or whatever.
Yeah.
But we have beautiful architecture.
Well, and also we have the values of, you know, okay, so this old warehouse, it may not, you know, look that great right now, but if you really dig in and you unpeel the paint, like at Clifton Mansion, you unpeel the paint and it's just, oh my God, I can't believe that's under here. Why would we take this down, you know?
Yeah.
So
we
actually
this,
have
right?
values, thank goodness, because of the historic preservation. You know, let's preserve what we have and be proud of it. So Baltimore City Hall, the oldest continually in use City Hall in the country. In the country.
Really?
Yes. It's a 200-year-old building. It feels like it, too. Sometimes it's hot, sometimes it's cold. You never can tell. But, and also that same chamber where we make our laws now is the exact same chamber where Mayor Preston and the council at the time created redlining and decided that black people were living here and white people are living here. And that was the start of redlining across the nation.
The original
happened
sin.
In the exact same chamber where we make the laws now. So to me, it's a very humbling experience to walk into the chamber and go, we're trying to dismantle everything that was bad about what happened here in the same chamber. This is crazy, right? So, I mean, and it's also open to the public. People should come. It's a great place. There's lots of history there. People should come to our hearings or come to the council meetings. We're going to start doing some other activities to be able to bring the public, because it is the people's hall. It's not something that should be, you know, people not thinking that they could be there. I actually took a group of students from the student youth workers from the family Baltimore Family Alliance through the building, and you know, some of the parents were like, we'd never been here before.
Okay.
That's crazy, right? So we have to do a better job as public officials to invite the public to the People's Hall, not just for the business, but to also understand what's been happening here and how we can change it. So it's a very interesting place. And so the fact that we have preserved that and, you know, preserve all of our other buildings is really one of the things about Charm City, frankly, that we should be celebrating. And really, I mean, I'm glad that there are so many developers who are reusing the warehouses, like the Hohen Building and some stuff in West Baltimore and all of that, because that's amazing. They just don't build things like this anymore. So the fact that we're able to reuse these buildings is amazing. And so that's what I want to do, is to make sure that we're rehabbing the houses and not, you know,
you're channeling Governor Schaefer when he was talking about keeping the facade of Memorial Stadium. Odette Ramos is here.
I represent that area.
Absolutely.
So.
There's a YMCA there. Hi, John.
Right.
So we're down here in Mako, and it's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery Window Nation. I'm trying to bring guests by. Mayor Brandon Scott will be here, Senator Ben Cardin, Senator Chris Van Hollen, and some others. The Mako thing, Mueller told me 3-4 years ago, you got to get animated, and this is during the plague, right? You know, it'd be like the Super Bowl for you, have everybody, you know, access to everybody and county executives and people making decisions want to come by. Tell everybody what this is, because I, as a citizen, unless you're working in state government or currying favor, selling, maybe you don't know about this, and it's not just a pretty big party, because it is, what do you get done down here?
Yeah, because sure. So
I stay sober down here, which is real. I make a goal to eat, but I don't go to the beach. I haven't gone near the
beach. You haven't gone there yet. No, you got
not at
to.
All.
So, the Maryland Association of Counties actually isn't just this conference. It's actually an organization, a network of the 24 counties and Baltimore City in Maryland. And so we actually work together on various issues, particularly during the General Assembly, that pertain to counties. And for instance, we work together and recognize that in 2007, the highway user revenues, which is what you pay at the gas pump, and your registration fees and all of that, just tanked down. And that was because the governor at the time moved that money from counties back to the general fund. So we worked together as a group of counties to say, wait a second, we need that money back for our roads or traffic calming, speed bumps, all of that stuff. So last year, we worked together. Baltimore, we are the ones who's to maintain our state roads. That's not the case in other parts of the state. And so we got more of a share, but our counties and our counterparts understood that and worked with us as a city to get that money up back to where it was. That's the power of having a network like this, right? So the other thing is that there's also affiliates, like the public health officials in each county work together, the sheriffs and firefighters and the police. And so there's different affiliates. And so this is really an organization that brings all of that together. Now, we don't always agree. The rural counties don't always agree with the urban counties. The Republicans don't always work with the Democrats. Like, it's not all, roses. But at least there is a place to have the discussion and figure out how to make sure that a lot of things like the Kerwin school funding and,
we're always chasing money for Blueprint. Right?
I know, right?
That's going
to
be...
Well, and then when the state said, no, you've got to have body-worn cameras, and they all work together to figure out what was the best way to do that. So this is that network. So they have a conference 2 times a year, one in the summer and one in the winter. This is the summer conference where basically every elected and all of their agency heads come to this place. There's a lot of displays back here in the background with businesses that want to do business with the various jurisdictions. But each jurisdiction has a booth as well to show off their best. And then we've got the state agencies. And then it's a lot of networking. So when I was an advocate in my previous job, I would come here also to catch people who I needed to talk to get ready for the General Assembly, which I'm doing as a council person now, and getting ready. So it's that networking. It's also for us in Baltimore really showing that we want to be a partner with the rest of the state. Oftentimes people are like, oh, Baltimore, we're so this, and you get all that, and you're just this, and there's a problem, all that. So part of our role here as Baltimore electeds is really to say, no, we all are going to work together as a set of jurisdictions, and Baltimore definitely needs more assistance than some others. But also, Baltimore's issues are similar to some of the things that are happening in rural counties. Public transportation, that's non-existent in rural areas, but they need it, right? So we can work together on those kinds of things. Poverty, hunger, same. So that's really what this group does, and the conference... Yes, it's a lot of fun parties, but it's also a lot of business gets done here. And I'm actually moderating a panel this afternoon on social media. So we're working together on that. I'll be doing some work with Mako on some of the housing stuff, because we are in a housing crisis in our state. We don't have enough housing for the people who want to live here. So it's a great way to get, involved.
Who's the most famous resident in the 14th district?
Oh, is the governor right here?
He's like literally, he's literally like,
yes.
right about here. Yeah.
Yes.
So what do you think of this guy here as he walks by? Say something.
Well,
nice
he's
about
my
him.
Constituent when he was living in Baltimore. Now he's living in Annapolis. And I'm super excited about Westmore. He has given his does this one that works so we can connect him if he wants to?
Oh, well, I don't think he's sitting down, but you can invite him. He's your resident.
Yeah.
It'll work. I promise you I can make it work.
And so he's also given his vision to his agency heads, and his agency heads are really excited to work for him because they know the vision and they're just tasked with making sure that it gets done. So it's really great. So we'll see if he can break away.
Oh no, he's not going
to
sit down. But he's going
to be able to
fist bump
sit
you.
With us.
Deb Ramos is here. She's from the 14th District. Westmore is creating quite
a little bit of a habit.
Did I ask
her
what goes
here.
On at Mako? And we're just sitting here,
and here
the governor just walks by.
Governor.
You know.
Hi.
Oh geez, here we go. Now it's all. Well, now I've lost control of the show. It's all over with. It's a good thing this isn't live, you know. How are you?
I am great, man.
It's good to see
I'm
you.
Ready for my crab cakes.
Where's your crab cake?
I'm ready for my crab cakes.
No, he can't stop. He's the mayor. He's the governor. Yeah, what am I saying? Get out of here.
Oh, man. I want him to stop.
Good to see you. All right.
Take care. Good to see you.
She's talking 14th. Your neighborhood. I just called the governor the mayor. That's all right. He's the mayor of the state.
The state. Yeah,
yeah absolutely.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Well, that was exciting.
You know, when I drop the gavel, I feel like Richard Scherer on Square Off. You know, I do that. You know what I mean? So you wonder what happens down here. But I think for me, the thing that I've learned about this is it the beer, the crab cakes, the secrets, the Fagers, the bands, the free food, the lobbying.
Sorry.
It's people getting together. And I think that it was such a beautiful night last night.
Yeah.
We have friends that live down here in Ocean City that came out, had a drink. They saw all this political stuff and people they knew. And I thought, it's kind of a beautiful representation of Maryland. And maybe it's because I had a couple of beers, but it was about 12:30 at night. My friend came in and she's like, I used to work for Company X and my boss loved going to Mako and I had to make all the reservations. And she's like, now that I'm in the middle of it. And I said, it's unbelievable because of the diversity of the state.
That's right.
Black
That's
people,
exactly.
white people, young
right.
people, old people,
right.
bureaucrats, Democrats, Republicans,
right.
you know, and all in the same room. Oh, that guy's from Prince George's. You can never say PG County. I learned that.
No,
Prince George's County. That was from Howard County. Hey, look, cornbread over there from, you know, from Wicomico County.
Right.
And everybody's talking.
Right.
And I'm thinking to myself, it's probably not this happy down at the State House in January and February, right? Like, if
it's
you're
a
down
different
in Annapolis,
vibe.
It is a different vibe.
It is a different vibe.
This
because
is peacetime.
It's really, you are exactly right. No, so it's a different vibe in January because it is about getting work done. It's, but here, it's about the networking. It's about celebrating Maryland. Frankly, and how great of a state this is, and also, you know, it's all about the networking. So, it's great.
You know, you almost reminded me of my wife when Joe Montana would walk by to get him to jump on the set at Super Bowl. you wanted him to sit down with,
no.
and I knew he wasn't going to sit
no,
down.
No,
with
no, his body people were like, no.
They're like, but I know him. He's lives in my district. I've sold him vegetables at the farmer's market, you know. There is something about different energy, because you were in the middle of praising him as he walked by, and he's like, but there's something different about him. And look, I sat with Governor Hogan. I endorsed Governor Ehrlich, mistakenly, as I've pointed out to him 20 years later, and Martin O'Malley as well. But when there is a new administration, and you're sort of new to this as well, you know, you're not a Ben Cardin, been doing this, but when he comes through, for everyone, there's a different sense of, we have a different leader. I felt it, and if I had him on, I'd say, you know, dude, I didn't even think about you, like, as the governor until I was literally in the left lane going across the Bay Bridge 3 days ago, and I looked up, and that sign
and
is there.
Says, yeah.
And it says Governor Westmore, and
right.
I'm like, wow, look at that. It's the first time it hit me.
Right.
Was literally driving down here the other day. It's weird.
No, he's very inspiring, and I think that's why people are attracted to him. It's not really about him when you talk to him. He's going to focus directly on you. He's not looking at the rest of the room. He's all in your space because he wants to know exactly like what's going on, and he listens. And he's an inspiring leader. And you know, we haven't had that in a while, and so it's very exciting. You know, a lot of people doubted him. It's like, well, you have no political experience, you know what's going to happen. But he's been able to adapt. He also got the right people. Aruna Miller is an amazing person, his lieutenant governor. She has a lot of political experience. She was in the General Assembly for 8 years. She was a transportation planner for Montgomery County, so she's way smarter than he is, too. And that's the thing, is he brings the right people around him to get the job done. And he has no qualms in saying, you know, look, they know what's going on. They have the we have the vision, and they're going to keep rolling. So I've talked to many of the agency heads.
And Governor Hogan left the state in pretty good shape in that way.
Well, I think Governor Hogan did a great job with, he and I sparred on a lot of things relative to housing and community development, but he did a great job on keeping people safe during the pandemic. He was very serious about it. he didn't buy into this whole Republican scenario, you know.
Thank God for that.
So, matter of fact,
I mean, I'll give him this. If he sat with me, he's been a champion in battling that. Not always in my mind in the appropriate way, but he's at least said I'm not a part of that.
Yeah.
And I've been appreciative of that.
Yeah, he didn't like Baltimore, which is
no
a problem.
No question about
so,
that.
So, you know, West being from Baltimore, being in Baltimore, you know, that is going to make a difference. But he's also been very clear. He's not only the governor for Baltimore City, but for the rest of the state. But he also understands that if Baltimore does not succeed, the rest of the state is not going to succeed. So
that's a fundamental proposition.
That's a fundamental fact. And so we're really excited about the opportunities to have such a partner. I mean, he was the first one to say, we're bringing back the red line.
What's the red line mean? That's my great transition.
Yeah.
What's the red line mean, Odette? I mean, it's conceptual. You can see a map. I've seen even further maps from 30 or 40 years ago that made us look like Paris.
Right.
Like,
I know.
The Beltway would have been a loop.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
I mean,
world-class cities have an excellent transportation system.
They do.
I don't know if you've been to them.
Yes.
Have you been to Mexico City?
No, I have not.
You have to go because that transportation system and the way, and it's clean and it's easy to get around in and it's beautiful and
New
historic.
New York, Paris, London.
All of those. So, so it'd be nice if we can get there in Baltimore. You know, it really would. So, obviously, the red line was something that it's the transit system, that would have.
It was
a lot of planning for many, many years to be able to do an east-west corridor transit line. Right now, in terms of metro or transit or anything in Baltimore, other than the bus system, we have a light rail that goes north-south, and we have a subway system that goes north-south in the same way. It's not even on the other side of town. So nothing connects. It's crazy. So the idea was to have an east-west corridor transit line, rapid transit line, to be able to get people from one end of the city to the other, east-west. So Governor Hogan, this is one of the things we didn't agree with him on, one day said, we're not doing the red line. We're going to leave $1 billion on the table of federal money and not go through with this. Crazy, right? There was like 15 years of planning, lots of residents involved. You know, one neighborhood didn't want it and the governor didn't want it, so it wasn't going to happen. It's horrible. So this governor, Governor Westmore, one of the first things that he did was worked with our Senate and House delegation and in Congress. They were able to put that $1 billion back into the budget for a red line transit system, and he announced that it is going to happen. So there's a lot of planning that's going on, a lot of open houses. They're going to start with a baseline of what the plan was, but then, you know, technologies change and plannings change and everything, so they're going to upgrade it. We don't know if it's going to be a tunnel under, you know, downtown, if it's going to be rapid bus, if it's going to be a light rail. All of that is on the table. This is super exciting for us. And so just like the Purple Line is going in Montgomery, Prince George's, this will be a really major factor so that people can get from one end to the other and easily get to jobs, connect different neighborhoods together that haven't been connected, and then connect all of our transit. So it's going to have a connection for the circulator, the bus lines, all of that closer to downtown. It's going to be great. So it's going to take a long time. We're not doing it tomorrow, but at least it's happening.
One night, I'm coming over to your place for proper coquito. We're going to make a real meal together.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, we got
to do that, you know? I mean, I'll bring my stepmother's, arepa recipe.
Right, there you go.
We'll get some pie, and we're going to do it up. We got to do something,
right.
You know?
I
want to give you a moment. Odette Ramos, 14th District,
well,
she's a cats woman. But her hobby is Mr. Caribbean, Mr. Grenada, Mr., you know, Soca Music, like all of that, right?
Well, but picture this, though. He's a tall, green-eyed, cinnamon sugar hair, you know, English-looking guy. He's not a Caribbean-looking guy.
Redlocks.
They called him DJ Redlocks. And so, but he definitely appreciates Caribbean culture, so it's really good. You know what?
Where'd you meet him?
Oh, gosh. I was working at Greater Homewood Community Corporation. This is in the late 90s, and he was on the board. And so we, you know, became friends, but we didn't start dating until like 12 years later.
Wow, okay.
Your little girl jumped in the shot
when we were in COVID, and it shows up sometimes on the front of the site because, you know, my pieces live forever on the website. How old now? What do we got?
She's 11. She's about to start middle school.
All right.
Oh, God, Jesus.
God bless you the next 6 years of your life.
I know. I don't have any gray right now,
serve
and I'm going to have like
just
gray.
Serve her is all you need to do.
So yeah, we're a little nervous about. I have to tell you though, John made crab. Hi, sir.
How are you?
John made crab cakes the other day. You're going to have to try them out.
I'm going to have to check his recipe, make sure that it's proper. I mean,
he's exactly legit.
He's
and
legit.
Then I also found another place for vegan crab cakes. As you know, I only eat the vegan ones. One World Cafe has some good ones.
I need to get over to Gertrude's.
We got to do Gertrude's.
I want to bring Jamie Raskin to Gertrude's because he's vegan as well. And so, I know they have this special thing, and it would be, we could do something grand.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We've been talking about
Did you see Dan Roderick's one-man show? Did you see it?
No, I need to.
Here's what you're going to do. This is
because it's coming back.
Pretend the audience isn't. December 8th, I'm taking an incredible group of friends who need to see it.
Uh-huh.
Real Baltimore.
Uh-huh.
And I'm grabbing
the
them
BMA?
All. I'm pulling them all up, and I'm like, we're going.
Uh-huh.
And we're
going to
make a night of it.
Yeah.
It's Christmas time. 34th will be rocking.
Yeah.
So December 8th, I'm doing a special with my friends and their spouses. By invitation, I'm inviting the whole community. There's only 400 seats in the theater.
Uh-huh.
But I told Dan, I'm buying a lot of tickets that night because I'm going
to
make it.
That would be great. I would love to see it. I have to. Because, you know, I'm so proud to have the... I live for that. But also, the BMA is in my district, so I'm proud to represent the BMA. Gertrude's is in my district. And then, you know, so... That would be amazing.
All right. December 8th, we're going to do that. All right?
Let's do it. Also, 34th Street in my district. So that's...
Well, I'm glad we talked about your hubby. The last thing I wanted to talk about with him is, like, when he brings Stryker's Posse in to drink beer. My wife loves the Bells, right? She loves...
He has the music series over at Peabody Heights.
Tin Pan, right?
Yeah, Steel Band.
Steel Band, I'm sorry.
We're actually doing a concert at the Roland Water Tower with the Steel Band.
Where is that?
It's on Roland Avenue, the 4200 block of Roland Avenue. So if you're going up Roland, as if you're going to Cold Spring Lane and you're about to go on the highway, you'll see this big tower. And it was literally a water tower when Baltimore City had these valve houses and pump houses to get water through the system and into people's houses. And it only ended up being that really operational for another 3 years because then Abel Wolman created the system that we have now. So it actually just recently got renovated. So it looks beautiful.
It didn't Google map right. It put me in like the middle of the... I swear, I looked it up. I'm like, because my wife loves the steel drums and it's like the 29th?
No, it's
like
the 27th.
27th. All right, so I saw it on the Facebook thing and I'm like... I want to go, but I don't know where the heck
it is.
It's
the 4200 block of Roland.
Well, put that address on there.
Okay, we'll make sure we do that.
I mean, it's not that far from Hampton, right?
No, it's not. It's walkable.
All right. What's great having you by. I'm glad I bumped into you.
Yeah, good
and
to see you. Thanks a lot.
Today.
I did.
I wore orange today.
I usually wear orange.
You been to a Birds game lately?
We're going on the 29th, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're Puerto Rican. I mean, you got to have some baseball, you know, like you.
I know. Well, baseball is a big deal in Puerto Rico, absolutely.
Right, so you're a baseball person.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we haven't gone to, well, you know, John listens to the games on the radio all the time.
Does he?
On the radio, all the time.
Okay.
Every game. You know, he's a huge Orioles fan.
Well, he makes the Baltimore orange shirts that I
wear. Yeah, well, you know, because he used to live by 33rd Street.
Right.
So he would walk into the game. So he is not a fair weather fan. He is always an Orioles fan. So he's very happy right now with how well they're doing. So, yeah, we'll be at the game on the 29th.
I had somebody call me a fair weather fan. And I'm like...
That doesn't
work. I built a radio station around this. Fair weather means they should have been winning the whole time. And, you know, I did Free the Birds, and the family hates me, and, like, it's all that. And I think to myself, every day of my life now, when I see people, I said it five times, I say, there's nothing I'm more proud of than my community organization to say that bad baseball is unacceptable and that it should have been this good. I shouldn't say every year. You don't expect them to be third. It should have been this much fun or this much involvement every year. You don't have to win every. They don't have to win this year. They don't have to win ever. But the foot forward to caring and bringing the community together. That's what the Orioles.
Well,
that's the real magic of Oriole baseball.
Well, the opening day is such a great day because everybody, even if they're not going to the game, everybody's in a good mood because there's hope for the future, honestly.
But there wasn't for years and years and years.
No, I know, but it's a totally different thing now.
Right. And this is the way it should have always been. And so, I'm not trying to be idealistic. I'm trying to be realistic to say what we had was unacceptable, and we don't want it again. Do you want to say anything about the stadium and the stadium authority? And you got anybody I could bring $600 million to who would then say, nah, I want more land of $300 million more, or else I'm taking my team.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I mean, it's an insane thing.
It's really insane. I only know what I've read in the paper. I'm sure there's a lot more to the story. I'm sure the Maryland Stadium Authority will make the right decision.
Well, that's your political side, but we all love the Orioles, you know?
Oh, yeah, they have to stay. So, you know,
right. And they have to be relevant like they are now.
Yeah.
I love relevant baseball.
Yeah, yeah. No,
don't you?
Great.
I
mean, people,
right?
Well, there's so many people going to the stadium
it's
now.
Awesome.
I mean, that's just how it's supposed to be.
That's good for downtown. That's good for the city.
But the players are also just really good people, right?
Yeah, it seems
I mean,
great.
That's,
yeah,
they
that's
do.
Been the fun part of
you
this.
Know, that's really been the fun part. They're cheering each other on, they're involved in the community. I mean, I think it's great.
Well, that's what I want to see where, you know, I lived through Ray Lewis and John Ogden and Ed Reed and, you know, all of that. And then we lived through Joe Flacco and, you know, the next thing. This baseball renaissance, I want to see what Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson and Grayson. I want to see these next 3 to 5 years. It's going to be fun, win or lose, October or not, to see what this becomes. But more than that, it's about rebuilding the Oriole brand that it never becomes what
well,
it used
to be. Well, I also think it's kind of foreshadowing of the city because it took a while to get the Orioles here. It's going to take us a minute to get where we need to be as a city, and we'll get there.
All right. We'll get to the Billy Joel concert, too, if we can. Bruce Springsteen, we got to get Bruce better. Get well soon, Bruce, all right?
Yes.
All right, we're at Mako. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. 50th anniversary here, 25th year. I got my new logo on the – thank you, Jessica, at the Hartford Designs for keeping us square. Our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. You buy two, you get two free. I'm celebrating the one-year anniversary of my new windows. My cat loves the windows, by the way.
Okay.
And at Raskin and Raskin Global as well. We're going to be at Pappas eating crab cakes on the 29th with Anne Arundel County Executive Stuart Pittman. Also, on the 15th of September, we're back at Fadley's, and we have our Coppin State partners there. I'm looking forward to that. And I've been down here rounding up guests. We even had the governor drop by in this
That's
segment.
Amazing!
Right! All right.
You know, that only can happen at Mako.
Odette's like not even professional. She drops the headstone. Boom! The whole thing. The governor's man-hogging me. We're back for more from Mako in Ocean City, Maryland, right after this.